So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Engadget podcast. I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
This week, there has been a ton of news. Like,
so
I feel
news.
Like more than usual, there were three events. We had the Microsoft event, which Devendra covered in New York for us, along with our senior writer, Sam Rutherford, who will be joining us this episode to talk about it. And then we had a Meta, aka Facebook event. And then we have, I mean... I don't know that this matters, but Samsung had a developer conference. Don't know if we care.
Don't matter. It doesn't matter.
Don't quite matter. So we'll dive into all of that this episode. But as always, if you're enjoying the show, make sure you subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. And we also typically do a live broadcast of the behind-the-scenes recording of this show around Thursday. Every Thursday around 10 a.m. Eastern, you can talk to us live, leave your questions in the chat. We have a cute and happy little community there, so it's usually a good time. Come join us then. Okay, so we just came off of Microsoft's Surface event last year. Devendra, you covered it. Sam also covered it with you. We've got Sam joining us here to talk about it today. Hey, Sam, how's it going?
Hey, how you doing?
I feel so bad for you, Sam. I really honestly...
It's been a busy week. So yesterday is like the first night I got more than 4 hours of sleep in last week.
Man, Sam, I know how that is. Yeah.
This has been like hard on all of us, but I feel especially bad for you because Sam, you were also reviewing the Pixels, which we will get to in a later part of this episode, but you barely finished reviewing the Pixels and you had to like go right to the Microsoft event, which, by the way, I hear was kind of a mess. Like, tell me about the in-person situation there. Tell me, y'all told me something about, like, they were figuring out audio issues. Devendra, do you want to tell us?
I mean, listen, this was a live stream. Everybody, like, there was no, like, big, let's go to the Microsoft campus, everybody, and have a huge audience. No, Microsoft doesn't do that. They have a little like, pre-made video with Panos Panay, like, really just showing off all his affection for his gadgets. And we could talk more about that. But in New York, we were in an upstairs office at their New York City store and just like a tiny little meeting room with a bunch of other journalists and like a TV on the wall. They forgot to turn on the stream, first of all. So this is just like a little funny gripe. And then they didn't know how to switch the sound to the sound bar. So we had like tinny TV sound for a while too. So
yeah, I pulled up the live stream on my phone and put my earbuds in so I could actually hear what they were saying.
Hilarious. I mean, that's not anything a normal viewer or consumer will notice, but funny seeing how other companies run their events and stuff. Like, simple stuff Microsoft was getting wrong. Yeah.
I also just want to point out for the listener of the podcast itself that you sound a little stuffy, and I'm very sorry. It sounds like are you exhausted from everything you've been
doing?
Yeah,
I mean, listen, I flew into New York Tuesday morning. I was working the way through. We spent all of Tuesday basically prepping for the Microsoft event because, as usual, we do get some of this news early. So we were able to like prepare our posts, and I'm always grateful for that. But then we have to actually, you know, get stuff ready for the event, go to the event. With Sam and I live blogged, you live streamed, Sherlyn. Then we had to immediately go to hands on. So basically, it was like nonstop work. And I was also just coming off of the big NVIDIA RTX 4090 review, which we'll talk about later. So, yeah, all of us are just like, I've just been typing all for the past couple of weeks, basically. Yeah.
It's Techtober. Don't you feel alive?
Oh, man.
The opposite. I feel dead. I'm buried under the mounds and mounds of work. But speaking of mounds and mounds of new shit, yes, I said that. Sam, why don't you run us through like what we saw, right? Speaking of all the hands-ons and things, what did Microsoft unveil?
Right. So they had a bunch of new Surface products, as you can imagine. There's the new Surface Pro 9. There's the new Surface Studio 2 Plus and the Surface Laptop 5, which are, I think, the big kind of devices. You also wrote a story about the accessibility, the modular mouse.
Yeah, I did work. I worked.
Yeah. and there was also some, like, you know, announcements about Apple Music finally arriving on the Xbox, which is nice if you're, you know, one of those people who uses devices from multiple ecosystems. Mm-hmm. And there's also a little bit of news about Microsoft incorporating some AI using DALL-E 2 to like make it easier to design things and, you know, create images and illustrations.
A whole
and
new
there's
app.
Even a little news about a new presenter remote for people who really, like, you know, need to give meetings and, you know, want an easier way to scroll through PowerPoint slides.
Yeah, Microsoft doesn't really roll out new apps, like whole new things all the time. But Microsoft Designer is going to be that new thing with AI. It's interesting, but I also feel like it's very like, can I call myself a designer? You know, like Microsoft Paint is not called Microsoft Artist. It's just you dabbling with a mouse. Whereas this is like, I'm going to type in some DALL-E 2 prompts and I'm going to get a cool image. I'm going to make a poster or something. It
takes
weird.
On Canva, yeah. Doesn't it? Like for people who
yeah,
want to.
Yeah, basically.
But why is DALL-E in it, right? Like what is this not for me to make my own posters?
It's some that's, kind of- that's exactly it, I think, because... just from the demo we saw, right? Normally you'd go off to like a clip art site or some place where you could like buy images, plug it in, make some cool stuff for your band or a poster or social media images. Now it's just like the power of AI and DALL-E 2. I type a couple of words and I get a perfect, not perfect, but I get an AI created image that will perfectly fit what I need. So it is kind of magical, but also I feel all those independent artists, all the Etsy people, who create these things and templates and designs people tend to use. This is exactly what we were worried about. And Microsoft is just full on saying, hey, it's a new Office app. Come get your AI art. You know,
first of all, is it free?
I believe it's part of Microsoft 365. So you have to be a subscriber. Personally, I think that is not to be too big of a shill here, but I think that's a pretty good deal, even though you're paying monthly or no annually for Microsoft Office. Now it's all called Microsoft 365. If you get the family plan, you can bring in, like just share it with your friends, split the bill. Like it's super cheap. I do remember it used to cost like $200 to buy Microsoft Office, right? Now you can split that up over several years and you keep getting new software. So I think that's worth it.
The other question I had, and other than was it free, is like, why would I want to make my own art? Like, I don't know.
You're asking this?
I know. I make my own. I would like to do my own
instantly start using this for Lynn for social media crap.
Microsoft showed us like, oh, like you can like tell DALL-E to like, oh, I want a picture of an astronaut, but like, oh, I want a picture of an astronaut that's a cat or a dog. And it's like, you know, it's actually like, I haven't spent a lot of time with DALL-E, and it was like, now I kind of want to play with it more, just like see what kind of like weird, like animations or drawings it can make.
This sounds like some, like one of those few software reviews we might actually do. So at Engadget, we don't review a lot of software, just a lot of work, and we have too much work already. This is something I would be down to review. But anyway, this is software, but this was the Surface event. We saw a lot of hardware, starting with the Surface Pro 9, Sam, just now you were telling us that that's something they unveiled. Can you tell us what's like new, different, outstanding about the Pro 9?
Yeah, Dev did the hands-on with that, so I'll probably toss it to him. But, I mean, it's kind of the same, you know, overall design as the last one. There is a new, like, Liberty Edition, Special Edition version of it, which I think actually looks pretty good. But it's if you know the Surface Pro, you kind of know what it is. The big change is that they've kind of, sunsetted the Surface Pro X and combined it into the Surface Pro 9 line. So now you have a choice of Intel processors and Microsoft's SQ3 processor, which is based on ARM. And they teased some more, AI enhanced effects, especially for noise cancellation and in the web camera. So Dave, if you want to kind of explain those.
Yeah. So first of all, I have to say, as I was writing this up, I had to like double check the specs a couple of times because it is very weird to see Microsoft say, hey, Surface Pro 9, actually, it's two very different computers, right? It is one with the Intel 12th-gen chip, one with the SQ3, two with very, very different like software compatibility. Like the Intel chip will run everything you're used to on Windows. The SQ3 will have to run, it can run native apps. It can run some Intel apps over emulation. But, you know, Sherlyn, you've reviewed the Surface Pro X. It's kind of the same deal where you're going to be running into issues running older software, maybe some of your drivers, on an ARM machine. And I had a couple chats with people at Microsoft saying like, what are you guys doing here? This doesn't make any sense. And I can imagine somebody going to Best Buy. To be clear, the ARM one has 5G And that is like the big reason for doing this. This is the first Surface with 5G. So it's called the Surface Pro 9 with 5G. But I can imagine somebody going to Best Buy and wanting a Surface and seeing this one, saying, oh, it has more battery life. It has 5G. That's cool. And then getting home and it doesn't work with their printer or some of their gadgets or some of their older software. And the Microsoft reps were just like, I don't know. They just kind of shrugged their hands. They're like, and this is me as like former IT guy being, I am projecting out the issues that I can see from this hardware. And they're like, I don't know. I guess people will just have to deal with it. I'm like, guys, that's insane to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's that chance that like someone goes into the store and they buy the Surface Pro 9 and it's got the wrong processor and they don't really know it until they get home and be like, oh, why aren't my apps working? And so that's a little concerning too.
Because the regular, like, I don't want to ding on people who are shopping for Surfaces, but let's say a more like an average consumer that walks into Best Buy and it's like, oh, I want a tablet that I can also work on. And then if they don't actually like, if the salesperson isn't giving them the correct spiel, like they're not explaining the differences between Intel and ARM well enough, whereas they like, if can you imagine going to the store and being told these two machines are the same except this one has 5G?
Yeah, totally. Like, and Best Buy people will not know that info. So
yeah, yeah. And the one with the SQ3 processor gets a little bit of battery life. So it's like someone's like, oh, I really want something that has good longevity.
Right.
And they don't ask about like the other stuff. It's like they might end up getting the thing that, oh, I want the better battery life, but then they can't run the stuff in the way they think they can.
I want to point out, sorry, quickly, that Michael Coley in the chat is like, as a former Best Buy PC salesman, this seems like a nightmare. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I also used to sell hardware, so I understand like how hard that would be to like convey. As you mentioned, Sam, the ARM one also has some like AI driven features. It can blur out the back of your images in the webcam. It can minimize sound, like a noise and stuff. The Intel one cannot do that because it doesn't have a neural processor. And again, the Microsoft people are like, well, you know, when Intel does add neural processors to their core line, it can support those features. I'm like, dude, it doesn't right now, so it's a problem. And they're like, I don't know. That's an Intel problem.
This is wild. Yep. I can't believe it. So, okay, so the Surface Pro 9, it's a very, very strange product. And I wouldn't even call it a product. I would call it a series, basically, right? But let's say we're comparing just the Intel versions to the last generation. What benefits, what improvements are we seeing? Sam, do you want to tell us? I know I mostly just want to make sure Dev doesn't like choke on his phlegm.
Yeah. I mean, the design is almost exactly the same. It's like, it's basically those features that Dev just mentioned. And like, you know, obviously a new processor, so you get a little bit more performance, but that's kind of about it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so it's 12th gen, so a lot more performance. I will say that.
Yeah, fair point.
The hybrid chips are fantastic, amazing. Throw away your 11th gen computers if you can, because those things were a mess. Like those chips ran too hot and weren't super fast. So 12th gen is a big upgrade. And they said the webcam's a little better. That's kind of it. Yeah.
I'm so excited for that. And then tell me about the SQ3 chip itself, because I remember the last chip we saw that was ARM-based was SQ2. I'm not sure what performance.
They barely, I mean, I think you had written that up, but they had barely been like, oh, by the way, here's a new Surface Pro X with SQ2.
Yeah, like, yeah, they did that, yeah.
We're not going to talk about this product. This product is a mess. Nobody wants it. I can understand why they chose to kill that product line. I think this will be a huge mess for Microsoft. And the fact that we can all see this coming, you know, and they're like, I'm sure they can. I think they just assume it's like an acceptable cost, right? Like it's the cost of war where there will be some casualties and those casualties are your consumers. It sucks.
Yeah, and Microsoft, they haven't been really beating the like Windows on ARM drum recently. And so I think this is like sort of like a more low-key way of like getting people to like push adoption for Windows on ARM without necessarily saying this is what they want to do.
Right, because that name is tainted, right? Because nobody loves it. Like since Metro, right, where like it was such a mess, people just don't have any faith on the idea of Windows on ARM anymore. And they haven't decided that the way to fix this is to actually make it work. They've decided that the way to fix this is to avoid it altogether.
Well, and like we look at what Apple did with the M1 and M2 chips, right? Like they focused on compatibility. They made sure like things transition pretty well. Microsoft can't do that as easily because they don't have full control of the ecosystem in the way Apple does. But also, like, what was I going to say? I did secretly run some benchmarks on the ARM thing. So, like, as I was talking with the Microsoft rep, I was like, okay, Geekbench, install. And I just I kept their attention as Geekbench was running. Geekbench is running in Intel mode, so it's emulated. But the score was still pretty low because that is the score you would expect to see from an Intel app being emulated on the SQ3. And both single-core and multi-core scores were well below any laptop we reviewed this year. I think I had to go back like several years to kind of find comparable Intel chips. So when Microsoft was telling me, hey, yeah, these chips are basically comparable in performance, that's not true. There's a lot of lies going on around this thing. Yeah. It's also more expensive. Don't forget that. Yeah.
Wait, which one's more expensive?
The SQ3. The ARM.
So that's dumb, in my opinion. But okay, with the SQ3, though, you are getting that cellular connectivity that the Intel model doesn't have. And that's a question that's come up in the chat as we're talking about this, is why doesn't the Intel model offer cellular? Is it because they just had to add a radio, right? Like they could.
I mean, that's what it always is. But you look at the surface and the size of it, like there's no space on the motherboard. So with an ARM chip, you cover the Sherlin, but ARM can bundle in the cellular modem inside the chip. Intel doesn't quite do this. They sold off their modem like division and everything. So they need to start doing this at some point.
Well, because they couldn't compare or compete with Qualcomm on 5G. And so there was a point where they were actually teaming up with, I think, MediaTek to do 5G.
I believe they were selling modems to Intel or to Apple at one point.
Yes, but then that crashed and burned. Sam, you also are familiar with this side of the like market or the industry. Do you have any insight here?
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things where it's like, in theory, like, Windows on ARM should be good, but, like, you know, kind of to what Dev was saying, it's like, Apple was very, very clear about the transition from Intel chips to ARM chips, and they're like, this is what we're doing, this is our custom-built chip, it's designed to run all the stuff, and for all the stuff that it doesn't run, we have a translation layer, and there's, like,
and
you
a really
know, we're going
good
to
translation
be,
layer, like, a fast
right,
one,
and we're
going
to be doing this transition over the period of 2 years, and, like, they said it, and then they did it, and it's, like, that engenders a lot of, like, trust and reliability when people are, like, you know, not everyone is super tech savvy, so, like, you know, they don't understand necessarily what the mean, like, a change in architecture means for the way the computer handles, like, just the apps that they want to do. And so it's just like, it really feels like Microsoft really needs to kind of nail down that whole transition process because it's been way longer than 2 years now. It's like, and even like, not even going back to like the original Surface RT stuff, but like, you know,
let's say 2016 when Trillin and I were going to Computex and writing about Windows on ARM, they've been talking about it.
They were talking about it, right?
Yeah. But all day Snapdragon, wasn't there a special name for it or something?
It was like Windows on Snapdragon.
Windows on Snapdragon, yeah.
Or Snapdragon PCs. So, but what we're learning from what Sam just said too, right? There's a lot to be said for consistency and reliability. Even if like the design may be stayed or like the features might be old or whatever, but if it's consistent and reliable, like a lot of Apple machines are, then at least users know what they're expecting, what they're getting, and they're not being gaslit half the time. But speaking of consistency, the other product that Microsoft announced seems also a little bit incremental, the Surface Laptop 5. Sam, is it true? Is it very incremental?
This is like, it really feels like a bare minimum, like, refresh. Microsoft really is, like, coasting with the Laptop 5. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I love the design of it. Like, it's still super minimalist, like, the brushed aluminum, and then they still kept that Alcantara top for the Platinum version, and you still get, you know, 13.5-inch and 15-inch models. But, like, I really feel like Microsoft can do better, and that I think that's what disappoints me the most. So there's really three main upgrades for the Surface Laptop 5. There's a new 12th gen, a range of 12th gen Intel chips, which great performance, I'll always take it. There's one Thunderbolt 4 port, and there's only two USB ports on the entire machine, even on the 15-inch one, which is like really annoying to me. And then the third is that there's a new sage green color option, which is lovely.
Looks good,
but
I will say that sage green for the Pro 9 and the laptop look incredible. So,
but you know, once again, we saw this on the Surface Laptop Go 2, so it's not a brand new color for, you know, Microsoft. And then there's one other smaller detail in that there's now support for Dolby Vision IQ, which, you know, looks at ambient light conditions and will adjust your display's like color settings and brightness, which is nice, but this is like not exactly like an unseen feature. Like Apple's been doing this for years. Phones have been doing this for years. You know, so it's like, and I actually had a chance to talk to some of the Microsoft like product managers and designers, and I was just like, you know, I've been using the Surface Laptop Studio for a while, and it's like, I really want something, especially for the 15-inch version, that's like, can I get a discrete GPU? Can I get an SD card slot? And it's like, on that 15-inch, like, it doesn't really compete with, like, something like an XPS 15, and I really wish it would. And I know they would probably have to make it a tiny bit thicker, but I think that's could be a really valuable trade-off. And so you have, like, you know, the Surface Laptop 5 13-inch model. That's your, like, really super thin, ultra-portable, like, very simple, fantastic. But then you just want something beefier that, you know, can do, you know, has a discrete GPU for video editing, photo editing, maybe playing a little game, game playing. And it's like, you know, there's some sort of weird part of me that, like, I've been, like, kind of hoping that Microsoft would come out, like, an Xbox gaming laptop for a long time. I don't know if they're ever going to do that, but, like, if they gave the 15-inch Surface Laptop 5, like, a discrete GPU, you would maybe kind of have that. And so, like I said, the Surface Laptop 4 was a great machine, and I'm sure the Surface Laptop 5 will be good, too. It's just, you know, I think Microsoft can do more. And then the other kind of small disappointing thing is that it's only Intel configs this year. There's no more support for AMD chips,
which were
like
so good.
You had on the Surface Laptop 4.
They were so good last year. I call the Surface Laptop 4 a normcore PC, and it's still just basic. Hey, you go into the store, you buy a PC, and you walk out with this thing. I feel like the Surface Studio, the Laptop Studio, should have been that more powerful machine. But then go check out my review of that. Like, I was really baffled by the quad core chip they picked for that machine too. So, like, it's always like half measures with Microsoft. Like, there's always something more we didn't get. And I hate that feeling. I hate that feeling of just like always being kind of like left unsatisfied by what they're
right.
doing.
Right. And, yeah. And if you look at Apple, after like years of people complaining about like not enough ports, the keyboard not being great. I mean, granted, the Surface Laptop keyboard's pretty good. But and like no SD card slot. And then recently Apple added all of that stuff to the MacBook line. And it's like, okay, or the MacBook Pro line specifically. And it's like, man, you see what's going on like elsewhere in the industry. And I think that's when it gets really frustrating.
I think maybe it will take Microsoft a couple more years to like listen to people. Because to be fair, it takes Apple a bit to listen to people too.
They don't care. I think they just don't care.
Microsoft doesn't seem to care as much for sure.
They're so big and powerful, and Surface is such a small part of their business. It's like they can be weird. They can have Panos being like very overly fond of all these computers. Like whenever he walks up to one of his computers, he's just like he's like a proud father, but maybe a little too proud. Like, they still hold hands while they walk down the street, but that's a teenager now, man. Like, relax a little
bit.
They
still kiss on the mouth or something.
Yeah, you really want to kiss at the new Surface Studio or something. And I feel like I think he genuinely does love these products, but to the point where he does not fully see the flaws in the design, too.
Yeah. And I don't think it's just him. I think it's a lot. So the other question I wanted to ask about the Laptop 5 is, Sam, you mentioned there's only two USB ports, but is there also still that Surface connector that there is specific proprietary?
Yes, the Surface Connect port still exists, and you do get a 5-watt charging port on the power brick, which, as you know, like I think is like a really neat thing to like add a little bit of utility to a power brick that usually is just like a complete afterthought. But like you, like especially in a 15-inch laptop, you should get more. And I also forgot to mention the webcam. There's, you know, there's an IR camera for Windows Hello, which is fine. But the webcam is still 720p, which is like,
what?
These are premium laptops. That's not okay in 2022. God.
They put 1080p on the Pro 9 and everything else too.
It's like we see what's going on even other like branches inside the Surface line, and it's like 720p is not okay. People are like video calling people working remotely. They need a 1080p web camera, and especially on systems that start at $1,000 or $1,200 for the 15-inch. Mm-hmm.
That's a shame too, because we looked at the Pro 9's camera, and honestly, it looks incredible. Like, it's 1080p, but it also looks like it's a mirrorless camera, basically pointing at you, like better than anything I've seen on a MacBook. So, yeah, it's weird how they have the good components and don't put them everywhere. Should talk about the other.
I was just gonna get to the Studio 2 Plus, but the Laptop 5 also doesn't support the background blur feature we were talking about before with the Pro 9, because it needs an NPU and the Intel chips don't have NPUs. Okay. So moving on to the Studio 2 Plus, was this at least a bit less disappointing, Devendra?
No.
Oh, God.
No. So again, I feel bad for these Microsoft, because it's the people who design these computers and come and show them to us. And I just had like a list of complaints, basically, my list of grievances, because we last reviewed the Surface Studio 2 in 2017, I believe. It was like pretty much straight up 4 years ago, like 2017, 2018. So it's been a while. We have been waiting for a refresh of this computer because I love this design. The Studio, the whole point is that you can like tilt the screen, push it down, turn to like an easel formation. They made this one faster. It has newer Intel chips, but not the newest ones. It has 11th gen chips, which again, 12th gen is where we're at. 12th gen is what you want. If you're buying a computer today, at the very least, get Intel 12th gen or was it Ryzen 6th gen, 6000 series. The 12th gen chips were such a huge improvement. It is shocking to see like Microsoft stick with the older hardware here. Because it runs hotter, it's not as efficient, it's just not as powerful. On the plus side, it does have an RTX 3060 GPU instead of like the 1060 and 1070 the older one did. So decent graphic, like decent 3D performance. You could actually play games on this. I'm more like, this computer starts at $4,300. If you want a keyboard and mouse, it's $4,500. Give me this year's chip. What are you doing?
On a system that's that much money, it's like it's outdated the moment it goes on sale. And that's insane to me.
I feel like every time I do this, it's the Ralph Wiggum meme of just like breaking the designer's hearts. Like I could feel when my comment just like really gets them. But I also feel like this, the particular person I talked with kind of agreed with me. It sounds like maybe it's their design process where they have to design so early, where if you were designing this computer last year, then you didn't have the 12th gen chips. You couldn't really prep for it. And maybe Microsoft has too large of a turnaround for some of these products to really make faster chips work. But you're Microsoft. This is a problem you've had for years. Deal with it. Fix that.
And it's not like they don't work with Intel. Like, you know, they share information because some of the features, like, you know, hardware and software rely on each other. And like, you know, they have some of this information. They have some of the roadmaps. They should have a better idea of what's coming in order to be able to select the proper components for the thing. And like, to me, it's so frustrating because I still love the design of the Surface Studio. I've been saying for years, I really wish Microsoft would just release that monitor as a standalone display. I would have one in my house instantly. Because people don't realize it's like not easy to get a really nice quality touchscreen that's that big, and you know the way that it, you know, tilts up and down, it would be like super useful. And so it's like it just feels like wasted potential, and that is, you know, it just makes me sad.
It's very sad. One thing I did ask is like, okay, can you just like halve the price? Can you give me this tilting screen? Can you give me a computer that is basically this, maybe not as fast, but more like an iMac and not like always the iMac Pro, you know? And it did. There were some like knowing glances between people at Microsoft there, like, okay, that sounds interesting. It does sound the last time that happened was right before they showed off the first Surface laptop. So I do feel like they are planning new ideas and new things, but I don't know who this computer's for. It's for very rich people or people who are like, you're an executive at a company and you have like an unlimited device budget, and you're like, get me that beautiful Microsoft desktop. That's who this is for, but not for normal people.
It's definitely beautiful. And the thing is, if they made that box underneath the Surface Studio just a little bit bigger, I feel like they'd have a lot more room for creative design or adding beefier components. And it's like, doesn't need to be that thin.
Give me expandable components. If I can plug an SSD into an Xbox, why can't I do that in a computer? Why can't I just plug in more SSDs? You know, it was one good thing. This does have Thunderbolt 4, so you can plug in faster external storage. You can plug in external GPUs. We've talked about why those things are kind of a bad idea, but it is an option with the Studio 2 Plus.
To contextualize a little bit, Devendra, how much was the original Surface Studio? Like, I feel like it's jumped in price.
It was also over $4,000. Like,
It's always been expensive.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, to be fair, I mean, I think other companies also make similar AIOs. Like, I think we saw
not
the
at that price.
One.
Not, yeah. I think but the only thing is the iPad Pro. And then
iMac
Pro. And then I think Microsoft was like, we're going to destroy the iPad Pro. And iMac Pro. And then Apple was just like, it turns out nobody wants it. It turns out the iMac Pro was a complete failure and we're just going to walk away from it. And nobody's giving Apple any shit over the iPad, like the iMac Pro at this point. Like it's a thing that happened. We'll forget about it and they'll move on. Microsoft has meanwhile mounted this full on assault against the iMac Pro and nobody cares.
Yeah. No, doesn't seem like it. Really quick before we wrap up the Studio 2 Plus, what other like new stuff about it is there? I heard Kenta Kawaguchi in the chat says that there's Thunderbolt now. 2 Plus, that's nice. Is there anything else?
That I mean, I mentioned that. That gives you the faster storage or external graphics.
Right. 11th gen chips seems to be the main thing that we're pissed about.
RTX 3060 is nice. If you are a creator who wants like a powerful machine, you have to be a very specific person. You have to be like a 3D artist or somebody who needs to use that tilting touchscreen. Otherwise, get a desktop. Get literally anything else if you just need power. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so that's the main hardware I think we saw. We also saw some like accessories like the audio dock, the Presenter Plus controller, some updates on the adaptive kits. Did you guys see these devices there? Or is there anything you wanted to
bring
up?
I saw the dock. It wasn't in use. It's pretty. It's a good idea to put like a dock plus make it a speaker. Yeah.
It's a better looking dock for like conference rooms, but this is not something that like you're going to want to have at home.
Yeah. Okay. So those two accessories sounded like they were made for conference rooms, people who are doing presentations a lot maybe. But the software side of things, we talked just now about the Designer app. We talked about a little bit about the Apple app integration. Is there like iCloud photo libraries, for example? Did any of this stand out to you all? Like, is this surprising? Is it a long time coming?
I think it's a long time coming. Like the whole idea of like having walled gardens between ecosystems is just like extremely frustrating. So it's nice to see that like, oh, hey, we're going to do cross-platform support, which we should have probably always had. But it's one of those better late than never things. But so it's hard to get too excited about it. I'm glad it's there, but it should have been here a long time ago.
Should have been here. I think about how bad iTunes still is in Windows. You know, iTunes does not exist on Macs or anywhere else at this point. In Windows, it's horrific. It's just, you could still buy stuff, you could still play stuff, but it's like unresponsive, it's very slow, it crashes all the time, it's a disaster. But Apple doesn't care because it's Windows.
Someone put iTunes out of its misery. But that seems like a good like kind of roundup for now about the Surface event. It's been a lot of news, but they also kept
we'll be
it
hearing
super
more
tight.
Soon because they're going to be throwing these devices at us to review. Yeah, we'll get them soon.
I believe the official on sale date is October 25th, so not too long from now.
So yeah, stay tuned for our testing, our impressions. But meantime, speaking of reviews, we got other reviews. Sam and I have been reviewing Pixel stuff, and our reviews went up yesterday, Wednesday, just after the Microsoft event. Sam, you handled the reviews for the Pixel 7 and Pixel 7 Pro, and I wrote up the Pixel Watch. So I guess the question everyone's been asking me, for the record, I also have been using the Pixel 7 and 7 Pro. Well, mostly the 7 Pro. Question everyone's been asking me is, am I, ready to main the Pixel 7 Pro? And I gotta tell y'all, like, that camera seems awesome. I read your review, Sam, and it was like, you seem to really like the cameras, but I haven't been playing with the cameras that much. It's like annoying. I'm just like, I wish I was more enamored with this phone. But Sam, you're the one who reviewed it. Tell me more about like what you feel about the Pixel 7 series.
Basically, this is like the second like generation of Google's like Tensor chip equipped phones. And so we're not getting a huge change in features, especially for the standard Pixel 7. But, we're getting a slight design refresh. I do think the phones look better than normal. I know, Sherlyn, you're still kind of on the fence about that one. But, we do get a new design refresh. Some new software features that are pretty nice. Stuff like Direct My Call, where you can, you call like a big business and it'll throw up a text menu like right as soon as you connect, instead of having to wait for the phone to listen to the audio, the automated voice messages. General better photo processing. Night Sight is way faster. Because of the Tensor G2 chip, it can be almost twice as fast just for the processing time. So on previous Pixels, depending on how dark it was, it would take up to 6 seconds for a night sight photo. Now we're down to like 3 or 4, unless you're doing like astrophotography mode. And then for the Pixel 7 Pro, we're getting new cameras. And so we're getting a longer 5x optical zoom, which is actually really great. Because aside from the 10x optical zoom on the S22 Ultra, this is like the best zoom on a phone. And I think that's really like a good comparison point is that like the Pixel 7 Pro starts at $899. That's S22 Plus money. And so you are getting a lot more just photography prowess for the same money, because otherwise you'd have to upgrade to the S22 Ultra, which starts at like $1,100. And it's kind of the same thing if you compare to Apple. It's the iPhone 14 Plus is the same price as the Pixel 7 Pro instead of like the Pro Max, which is, again, starts at $1,100.
Or even just the Pro, which is like $999, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, okay. So when you mentioned the night sight being faster. So I did try to test this because I was at situations where I had like diverse groups of people hanging out in groups. And so I wanted to test this real tone thing that they talked about too. But we were taking a group photo. We asked like a server to help us take the photo. And I was like, and it had night sight on. And she was like, oh no, this thing is taking forever. Why is it in night mode? Like she was still having trouble taking the photo.
So, yeah, like, I don't buy that as like a real complaint because Apple has their auto night mode too. And so if you take a photo in low light and it will like, you'll see like a little like icon pop up, but like you'll still hold it and it takes like 2 to 3 seconds. So it's like, that's not necessarily like a complaint because it's happening on across all the phones. Samsung does it too, where they have an auto night mode and it takes 2 to 3 seconds if it's dark out.
Okay, so it was in like, I mean, I was in the picture waiting for her to, waiting the shot for the shot to process, and it felt like it took longer, but I will also admit that like that was one of the first, that was like literally the day we picked up the review unit, so it might have been that I hadn't run a software update yet. I will also say that like, caveat being that it was the day I picked up the review unit, but the pictures that came out from that didn't seem like super improved in terms of real tone.
Like, yeah, it's real tone, like the improvements, like say they add 10,000 new images to the machine learning processing, and you know it should be, you know, more flattering to people with darker skins, which is great, but the effects I found are super subtle, so I didn't, you know, it's nice that like they're continuing on to improve it, but it's not the jump that we got last year from no real tone to having real tone. I think that's kind of the story for the Pixel 7s as a whole, because there was a lot of changes that went into the Pixel 6 because of that jump to Tensor. And, you know, in this has also been like the whole like theme for this year is like the Pixel 7 Pro is a refinement of the Pixel 6, which was already a great phone. And they didn't mess with the pricing. They didn't mess with the design. They made it better. The screens are still great. Battery life is better. And so it's like all around a slightly better phone. You know, you could kind of think of it as like an S year for the, you know, iPhone people. And so it's just a really good phone, and it's a better value than pretty much all the other flagships, especially with the Pixel 7 standard starting at $599 compared to like $800 for a basic iPhone.
I've watched your video, read your review, so I kind of know also that you were talking a little bit about like battery life. But for the people in the audience, what's the battery life like?
It's about just shy of 18 hours on our testing for the Pixel 7. And the Pixel 7 Pro actually gets slightly worse battery life just because it has a bigger screen, higher res screen, and a higher refresh rate. It's 90 hertz on the Pixel 7, 120 hertz on the Pixel 7 Pro. So it's closer to about 16 and a half hours on our testing. But, you know, I didn't really have an issue with, like, having battery anxiety throughout the day. You know, I was still finishing the day with, like, 25% left or more regularly.
Well, and you mentioned also it runs hot. Which something I noticed with the Pixel 6 Pro all the time.
It's like, I mean, this is one of those relative things. I noticed that, like, you know, it doesn't have the same performance as you get from an Apple A series chip or even a Qualcomm Snapdragon 8 Gen 1. And so, like, if you're really pushing it, really playing games under load, it does get a little warmer. It's like nothing more than like making your palms sweat a little bit. So it's like a thirstier chip, I guess. But like, you know, it's not. Nothing dangerous. You're never going to burn yourself just by touching the back of the phone.
Yeah. To be fair, I've never encountered that like dangerous levels of heat on a Pixel 6 Pro either. But I do notice that they seem to run hotter than other phones. So maybe like a Tensor thermal dissipation issue or like just the way it consumes power or generates heat. Devendra, What do you think about the Pixel 7? Because you always have these hot takes.
Yeah,
you
we talked about it. Sam and I talked about it a bit. They're incredible. Like they look
Yay.
Really good.
One
good thing from Google this year, at least they look good. I haven't fully used them. We were excited by a lot of the Pixel watches, but you know, like I said, like this is if I had imagined HTC still existing and evolving over the years, like it would probably look like these phones. Yeah.
All right. I mean, pivoting from the good Pixel to the bad Pixel.
Are you going that far?
Go.
I'm not. I don't know if I'm going that far.
I'm not going to make too much fun of you, but you know.
You can go ahead. You already tweeted out the way. Yeah. You already tweet made fun of me.
Just reading your review, like knowing how much you wanted to love the Pixel Watch, and I was just cackling. I was like, oh, Google.
The small voice saying, deep inside saying, I told you so.
Told you so. Don't trust Google. Don't trust
I'm
Google.
I'm so annoyed. Here's what happened. If y'all haven't read our Pixel Watch and our Pixel 7 and 7 Pro reviews yet, go on because there's a lot of detail in there that I might not be able to get into during this segment. But yeah, so high hopes, right, for the Pixel 7, a Pixel Watch, because it's been so long since we've first heard rumors back in 2013 or earlier. So it's close to 10 years now. We've been hearing about a Google-made smartwatch. A lot of people ask me to compare this to a Moto 360, and I can tell you that's impossible. Moto 360s just don't run anymore. Sorry. Can't turn them on. They're just not going to work. But
it is the dream of Moto 360, though. I feel like
exactly
this is the dream of the Moto 360. Like when we saw that, it was like, ooh, round smartwatch.
Yeah.
Interesting. We were Android.
So hype, right?
So hot. Yes.
The title of my review and the review video for this is Pixel is Google and Fitbit's imperfect marriage. And I think that is really what drives a lot of my disappointment with the watch. So let's start with the good, right? The good is that the hardware is great, right? It looks good. It fits nicely. I even wore it.
Possibly the best looking smartwatch on the market.
Absolutely. One of the prettiest, if not the prettiest smartwatch. I only have caveats because Fossil does make some really nice looking watches, even though they're not as, you know, functional. And there's some like Withings watches out there that are like hybrid that also look very nice. But as far as Wear OS watches go, up there. But then we dig into the software, and this at its core runs Wear OS 3.5. So it's the Wear OS 3 that Google kind of co-engineered with Samsung. So like ties in, half like Wear OS. And then it has its own watch faces with complications. So kind of borrowing ideas from Apple. And then you have fitness and health tracking courtesy of Fitbit. And I have to say courtesy of Fitbit because you can't escape the branding. It's not like after Google bought Fitbit and they merged, they were like, we're one family now. We're just going to say this is, you know, the baked-in auto detection workout features. No, they have auto detection, but it's all under the Fitbit umbrella. You'll see very familiar Fitbit animations when you get, like, stand reminders. I mean, it's nice that you get stand reminders now because Wear OS just straight up didn't before this. Samsung and Apple already did. But my biggest problem with this, And I got real angry in our review video. If y'all haven't watched it, I think that's the angriest I've been in a review video ever. But I like was yelling for half of the video where I go like, why? So with Fitbit devices, I was already mad at this, but with Fitbit devices, they track your sleep, they track your whatever, they track all your data over, but you can go back and look at your data over time. But if you want to look at anything beyond a week or a month or whatever, you have to subscribe to Fitbit Premium. That's $10 a month. That is some bullshit. Okay, never mind. Never mind the fact that it is some bull on like Fitbit devices. I don't even, I'm like, I get it. The Pixel Watch.
Yeah. What are you getting? Like, what are you paying for with premium?
You, first of all, the device comes with 6 months of free Fitbit Premium. So when you're using it out of the box for the first 6 months, you get used to having this, like all your data at your fingertips. Everything is a nice experience. And 6 months later, they yank the cord. You're not going to get all of this. So what you're going to lose is, let's start with the stuff that doesn't really matter. Like, okay, free 200 over plus free workouts, guided workouts on your watch, free nutritional data, that sort of stuff. They give you like more detailed insights and reports on how to better recover or meditation.
Workout readiness is one of the advanced features.
Exactly. So readiness, your readiness score, which is based on how long you slept, how well you slept, how stressed you are, and then they minus off like how much you've worked out, whatever. They tell you how ready you are to take on the next day full of workouts or whatever. Sure. And then there's, you know, Deepak Chopra meditations. Those are under premium. You know what? Keep that under premium. I don't care. Keep it under premium. You know what they're taking away? They're taking away your sleep insights that are about what zone of sleep you're in. So your REM zone, your deep sleep zone. Just freaking... I'm sorry. I got so mad during the recording of the video. I screamed. This is the part I screamed, which is that I get it if Fitbit wants to like... keep this part of the sleep tracking under a paywall if no one else in the market is doing it. No one else in the market has been using your heart rate to detect which sleep zone you're in. But Apple introduced this with WatchOS 9 this year, and now it will do this for free.
Same thing for Samsung. Samsung
Watch
has
been doing
too.
It for years. It's so for dumb. Years.
This
for
is
free,
this
for
is
years.
The Stadia problem. This is like Google getting into a mindset of a thing like, oh, a subscription thing where people may have to buy these games too. Like none of this makes sense, but we're Google. We'll make it work.
Why?
I feel like for this, if you buy the Pixel Watch, just get these, like you get it for life. Get the premium features for life. That should be the deal. You're Google. You can afford it.
And Sherilyn, you didn't get into the other bad part is sometimes you can't track your sleeping because the watch, the battery life is so bad, it just dies in the middle of the night.
I was getting there because I was, I think, more pissed about this than the bad battery life, which I'm like, that can't be.
The bad battery life is much, because I've been testing this too, it's much bigger issue for me, I think.
Yes, it definitely is also a big feature. And these are the two things that kill the Pixel Watch, right? These are the two big cons in our review. We start off listing the biggest con is the battery life, yes, but I am more in sensed, I think, by the Fitbit Premium thing, because to me, that is such an easy thing to fix. To me, you can straight up fix that right now. Fitbit and Google, I know you're listening to me. You can fix this right now.
Sherilyn's begging. She's angry. She's angry begging.
They know because I've already communicated this to them and I got a statement from them, which more or less the general gist of the statement is that they're continually assessing what goes into Fitbit Premium and what doesn't. So listen, y'all know I love you. I say this with the best intentions.
For whatever reason, yeah.
For whatever reason, because I like them. Y'all can take the sleep tracking, the sleep zones thing, immediately remove it from Fitbit Premium and put it right into Basic. Start with that. And then do the long-term reports thing. Take that out of Premium. Because this is my data. This is my workout history. If I can go into Apple Fitness and scroll the summary, like the see my movement rings for all eternity, and if I can't do it on a Pixel Watch, then I'm sorry, but I'll always stick with Apple. I will stick with whoever gives me my data.
It's a point where you're not having a competitive feature set against the watches that you're trying to beat out. And that is just like, well, okay, you're just missing stuff. And this is stuff that, like, as you said, you could fix.
I bet, and I can see some Google managers being like, well, you know, that's not how Fitbit Premium works, guys. We can only offer certain things. You make the rules. You control all of this. You can choose to open it up. Yeah.
It's like they realize that if they don't force some of these more important features into premium, that nobody is going to pay for premium, right? Because who's going to pay the $9.99 a month, $10 a month for the Deepak Chopra medication?
There's an accountant somewhere who thinks this is a really good idea. And they're like, and everyone else is like, I know there's other people who in the company who don't want to do this, but like the bean pushers or the bean counters being like, well, we can scrape a little bit of extra money out of people. And it's like, not only is that just like really mean to the customers, you're not engendering any goodwill towards
that's ultimately
products.
It's maybe accountants. I would say more like the middle managers that a lot of these big tech companies are filled with, where like, I'm sure they have people under them yelling at them the same things you are, Sherilyn. And I think they're like, I got to push this product out the door.
It's the people who work at Fitbit that have the premium thing for free that don't realize how annoying it is to have to pay Netflix money to get your own data, because they can see it. They're like, oh, premium is great, but they don't actually have to pay for it because they work at the company. So they're like, oh, I got all these features. Yo, premium is great. I love that meditation. I'm sorry, I keep harping on the Deepak Chopra meditation, but it is the one.
I think you need to meditate, bro.
Maybe.
I think he's
This made me really pissed off. But what made me disappointed was the battery life. To Sam's point,
you had one job. Last through the night.
Well, so here's the line that I said in my review video too, which is that like Google said it would run for 24 hours. Like the runtime is 24 hours. But that has to be with a lot of caveats. It does not, Sam is shaking his head vigorously. It does not last 24 hours by any means, because I think to last 24 hours, you have to turn off the always on display. You cannot be tracking anything at all every day at all. Just don't track a thing. Do not get any notifications probably, right? Because just it
don't use LTE.
Yeah. So to be fair, I didn't use LTE. I didn't even set up a cellular and I was getting like maybe 12 hours of juice. That runtime is with always on display with like, I usually do about 3 workouts a day, 2 of which are outdoor walks. So not really a real workout, but like GPS is sort of running, right? And then step tracking is happening in the background all the time. The heart rate sampling, I feel like, is one of the reasons their battery life suffers so much. They're sampling heart rate at once every second, which is more frequent than the competitors. Fine, I get that. And I actually like that, but not at the, you know, trade-off of like battery life. Google also said that they did like have a dedicated coprocessor that's lower power for the features like always on display and heart rate sampling and that sort of stuff that would normally drain your battery life, but it doesn't seem to be doing all that much. The other thing is what Sam was alluding to, sleep tracking overnight. Google said you need to make sure your watch is at least 30% charged to track your sleep, right?
Be sure to charge your watch before bed, everybody.
Yeah, cool. But in Sam's experience, if you only have 30%, but first of all, 30% is a lot for a watch that doesn't last all day to have at the end of the day. When I got home yesterday, I was like 17%. I was like, well, there's no way I'm wearing this to bed now, but never mind. Sam was rightly saying that like he had like you had what like close to 30% and then when you woke up was dead.
Yeah, it was like between like the 26-27%.
Yeah. So you were close to 30%. So I guess you didn't have at least 30%, but I did. And when I wake up the like, yes, I get my sleep reports or whatever, but you do definitely need to charge your watch before bed and even after you wake up. Because it is using that battery when it's tracking your sleep.
That's what makes me mad is like now you're babysitting the phone because you're like, I don't want one more thing that I have to think about charging all the time. And it's like, so, and I've been thinking about this more. It's like, there needs to be like 2 ways that smartwatch charging works. You either charge it every day at the same time, or you have a watch that lasts multiple days and you don't have to worry about it like as a regular thing. You just charge it when it's low.
I know how Google's going to fix this, guys. They're going to give you a charging thing that you can wear in bed and just have a nice cable. Just attach your strap.
Absolutely
in bed.
Not.
And as you roll around at night, it gets tangled around and make it over your neck or something. But you know what? There's oxygen sensors. So the Pixel Watch will alert you if it still has battery life, if you're getting choked.
Freaking troll. You troll. I can't even with you right now, Dev.
I Googled this problem. Like, I Google solved it as an engineer.
And so,
yes.
And so the other thing that like really makes me annoying is that, okay, like say like you have to have 30% charge before you go to bed or else the phone or else the watch dies before you wake up. Okay, that's bad. But the thing is that like last night I was at like 17% charge left and I'm like, okay, now I'm in a position where I have to charge the watch before I go to bed. But the other issue is that charging takes so long.
Yep.
It takes, I think it's 90 minutes to go from.
No, it's like, 80. 80
minutes
from
0
to 100.
From yeah. dead to full.
Yeah.
And it's like, so now I have to time when I put the watch on the charger to like make sure that it's charged before I go to sleep. And it's just like, I'm just managing too much stuff. And it's like, I don't want to. And so what I ended up doing is I just put it on the charger and I left it on the charger all night and I didn't get sleep.
I do love the idea from AXBX in the chat of a wireless charging bed where, oh, yeah, that'll keep it charged. Like,
and that'll charge
slowly,
me overnight,
slowly
yeah.
being microwaved overnight just to keep our smartwatches powered.
Our live stream producer, Julio, has a great, even better idea, actually. He's like, just get 2 watches, obviously. Day
That's
watch
true.
And night
That's
watch.
True. Honestly, that is a thing. I remember reading about people doing, like, tech executives would have 2 phones or something, would have their office phone, then their, like, outside phone, you know?
The side piece phone and the
inside watch, outside watch.
Look, I want to point out also that the thing about the charging speed is I didn't feel like it was that slow for the first maybe like 30%, right? Because Sam and I actually met up over the weekend during the review window, and we were at the player and I had to go to the gym. And I was like, oh crap, my watch is at 3%. So I left Sam and his wife and his son, and I ran to my gym to plug in the watch, left it there, ran out to hang out with them again, and 15 minutes later went to class, right? In that 15 to like 18 minutes, it got from 3% to like 36%. So I was
Okay, but the issue is that did you explain your sequence of events? We were like, I was at the playground with my family, and then you came and stopped by, and we were chatting, and he's like, oh, I have to leave in the middle of the conversation to go to the gym to put the watch on the charger, and then you came back, and then you left again 15 minutes later. It's like, that's an insane sequence of events.
So seamless, guys.
Yeah. It would have been nice if I hadn't had to like leave in the middle. But anyway, our deeper thoughts on the Pixel Watch, Pixel 7 and Pixel 7 Pro are all on Engadget.com. Go check them out. And if you have any questions about these products, because you know I have feels and thoughts, you can always hit us up, podcast@engadget.com. But yeah, I mean, look, I think we're nearing the end of review season. I'm very excited for that.
Says you. Yeah.
Yeah, for me anyway.
Yep.
I'm not going to partake in any of the Microsoft stuff.
We may have some Apple stuff we're hearing about eventually.
Yes, yeah. Rumors.
The iPad time is going to happen eventually, so who knows?
Well, stay tuned for that. So that wasn't the only big news that happened this week. As I mentioned earlier, we had a Facebook/Meta event. And in addition to a bunch of Meta-related news, like Metaverse-related news, we also are getting a new headset. And Sam, you saw this in person, right? Tell me all about it.
Yeah, so about a week and a half ago, I got a chance to go to the Facebook building in New York City, Meta building in New York City, and got to try out the Quest Pro. This headset is like, I'm almost embarrassed how much I like it, because it's like, there's so much cringy aspects about the metaverse, but the hardware is incredible. It's the perfect blend of, the Quest 2 was such a good VR headset because it was cheap, it was easy to use, it was lightweight, it was comfortable, and then the Quest Pro just adds everything to that, but then the performance is so much better. And they've increased the resolution, and it kind of sits on your head like a visor, so it's not like, it's not huge and clunky, and it's a standalone thing, so you don't need to have a big beefy gaming PC and a wire running from the headset to the PC just to use it.
It honestly looks more like a Magic Leap now than a VR headset. Yeah.
Can you describe the way it looks, by the way?
Yeah, and so one of the big things is that you're using new pancake optics, so it kind of uses that like the light refracts back in on itself. So they were able to make the front of the headset 40% thinner compared to the Quest 2. So it's much more lightweight. And so there's a big, visor with like, reflective plastic in the front, and a headband that goes around back. And like, there's just a lot of innovative design on there, because, they wanted to make it comfortable, but it's a standalone system, so they had to put a battery in the thing. And it needs more power than the Quest 2. So what they did is they added a curved battery to the back of the headband, so it wraps around your head, and you don't have this big, chunky battery pack sitting on your head. And then on top of that, there's built-in speakers, and they support spatial surround sound. And it's just really lightweight, and just, you put it on, there's a little dial in back to adjust the fit, and then you can move the eye cups around to change IPD, and it's really easy to use. And like, it was kind of funny, because like, I would put it on, and some of like the Facebook or Meta product managers would be like, oh, you like, they're like saying, oh, you just got it right away. And it's like, you can be up and running in 2-3 seconds. It's that easy. And then they, there are also some thoughtful accessories, because there's little light blockers that attach magnetically onto the side of the thing. So if you don't want people like peeking in on you, or you don't want to block out more light so you get a really immersive experience, you can do that too. And it comes with a wireless charging dock that charges both the headset and the controllers. And then on top of that, the controllers are new. And so instead of having that big loop with LEDs around the outside of the controller, there are sensors built into the controller. So it does hand tracking and finger tracking. And then there's 10 sensors on the headset itself. So you get a full color pass-through, which is really kind of surprisingly good. And then there's sensors on the inside that look at your face. So you supports stuff like foveated rendering, so you're not wasting processing power generating visuals on the stuff in the sides of your vision.
That's full on eye tracking, right? So that's
Big. And so that's that's using eye tracking to do foveated rendering, and also does eye tracking to see, you know, your eye movements and facial tracking. So it, you know, if you lift your eyebrow or if you make a face, it does that, and so that kind of transfers into Meta's avatars.
Oh, I mean, speaking of the Meta's avatars, there's more to get into there, I am sure. But I just want to point out that you said pancakes and now I'm hungry. But anyway.
Every time we talk about pancake lenses, sorry.
Oh, man, I know. But no, Sam, you check these out in person, right? Like, were you able to experience visually, like, what this looks like?
Yeah, and so we did 8 different demos, and the optics are surprisingly sharp. The screen door effect is almost completely eliminated. If you have good vision, you will see like a little faint outline. But, you know, given that it's a standalone headset, I really don't have a ton of complaints about it. Refresh rate goes up to 90 hertz, and it's just like, it's a really easy experience. Now, I've never been someone who like gets like VR-induced nausea, so like I'm probably not the best person to ask in terms of like, does your stomach feel okay? I felt fine the whole time. It was just like very easy to use. And you know, I was also really surprised by like the precision of it. So part of the job of those external cameras is that there's something that Meta's calling scene understanding. So when you put it on, the headset scans your room and it knows where the walls are, it knows where door openings are, it knows where the ground is. And so you don't need lighthouses like you do with a Valve Index. But on top of that, it's like, if you're doing something like VR painting and you like you get done painting your thing, like when I was there, I did like a little Bob Ross painting. You can take the painting with the controller and just pin it to a wall, and it pins exactly where the wall is, so that if like, hey, someone else is like wearing a headset and they walk in the room, they'll see that painting on the wall in their headset too.
There's a camera right on the controller, which is just like, yeah.
And then like for other stuff, like there's another app where I was taking GIFs from Giphy and just pinning them all around virtual space. And it's like, so you walk into a room, it's like I had Mario's dancing on the ceiling, and then there's Yoshi's running around on the ground. And it's like, it's just kind of, it's really impressive how well Facebook has integrated that stuff, especially coming from the Quest 2, which is like a pretty low power machine, but versus like
pretty well
really expensive heavy headsets.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking forward to testing this, Sam. Like, I'm jealous. You got all this great hands-on experience. Hopefully, they can just send us like multiple headsets.
I think they can.
Yeah, they better, because I think. And the other thing is like, you need multiple people to test this out, because obviously part of the other like selling point, and this is like a big selling point that's going to be hard to convince people to do, is that like they want people to work in VR now. So they have Horizon Workrooms, which is like their kind of virtual office setup. And I was like kind of shocked, because like my first demo was like them teaching me how to use the headset and stuff like that. And it's like they had Meta product managers talking. It's like, and I could see him, like he was raising his eyebrows. I could see like when he would like get like excited about something because his eyebrows were raised. I could see him smiling, and like, you know, instead of like, he was like, oh, do you understand this? And I would just go, I would nod, and I didn't have to say verbally yes, because your reactions come through. And it's like, it takes a lot of like, they're, like for anyone who's used like old VR headsets, there's a lot of like mental translation you need to do to like figure out how to communicate what you do normally in real life into VR, because the headset was not capturing that data. But now the Quest Pro is really doing that in a way that's like, oh, I feel a lot more like I'm talking to someone. And then, you know, if you want to have a shared virtual office, you can have like people sitting around the desk, and it's like, Sherlyn, I don't know how much of a VR person you are, but I know you're like the number one person. Like, you love like at trade shows, you're like getting in a room with like a whole bunch of people, and like you're, everyone's working on their stories, and like you're sharing, like it's kind of like you're in the trenches together, right? And it's like, but with now people working remotely, you don't have that kind of thing. But it's like, I was like kind of like weirdly enthusiastic about like using a virtual office space to like, you know, have a workroom situation that, even though we're not in the same physical space, you can kind of do that.
During the pandemic, I almost made like Chris Velasco and like Sam and our other friend Julian just do a hangout call where I could leave it on in the background and we could work together like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yes. I mean, that is, that I know people who do that just for like, they're drivers, right? And they drive all day. They will leave a FaceTime call on with their best friends or their partners or something, and just like, just have that connection all day. I don't know if we need VR for that is the thing.
Yeah, and I think I definitely think there's like, that's the hard selling point, is that You know, you don't necessarily need VR for that. But part of the like thing, the thing about Horizon Workrooms is like they're trying to do it so that, and it was an intentional design to leave part of your peripheral vision open by default, so that they want people to like work in VR and like work in real life with people and not feel like it's hard to do. And that's part of where that pass-through camera comes in and still being able to peek out the sides of the goggles. And so, and on top of that, like, you know, this is kind of a like a building on some of the previous Horizon Workroom stuff. It's like you can also connect the headset to a PC, and then you can use all your PC apps, not all of your PC, but like supported PC apps, including some like Adobe stuff, and like, you know, Chrome and you know, general web browsing, so that you can have like, you can be typing on a physical keyboard and it shows up in the goggles, but you still have that physical keyboard. You're not like, you know, just touching some piece of the desk, and you can use your mouse, and it's the way that they're blending the virtual space and real space is really interesting. And then they also have like the ability to do cutouts, so you can see like your whole virtual office, and then you have a window in your virtual office into real life, so that you can see people walking by, or you can see the keyboard in front of you if you need to do
that. That's super. I mean, so I tested out a whole bunch of the workroom stuff like last year, I think, and it was pretty basic on the Quest 2. Like at one point, I think I told you guys the story, but Mark Zuckerberg was like sitting right next to me, and then it is very weird to have that experience of like, oh yeah, he's just right there, because the audio proximity and everything made it feel very, very similar. But then I was watching the like recorded video of the meeting, and my avatar was just doing like crazy hands, like just doing like dancing jazz hands.
Because, and that's the thing, is like the Quest 2 didn't have the hardware to deliver the experience that would make people want to work in VR. And so like a lot of people's like, see, it's like, oh, the avatars look janky, motions look janky, and it's just like, it was like not a great experience. And so like, you know, when I talked to one of the product leads at Meta, they're just like, they really strongly believe that the Quest Pro is like, it's like, if you build it, they will come. They needed to make this headset in order to work with the software in a way that doesn't feel completely janky.
Yeah, but it's like more like, what if you build it and they don't come?
Yeah.
You know?
Right. And that's the other big question is like, even as good as the hardware is, it's still a big gamble to be like, is this what's going to make people want to work and live in VR? And I don't know
if people really want to do that, is the thing. Go ahead.
One big part of whether or not people will buy into this is exactly that, the pricing, right? This is $1,500. How much more
is
that compared to the Quest 2?
The Quest 2 starts at $400.
Yeah. They just raised the price. So now
they recently raised the price. And so it was funny because I was like, during the Meta Connect live stream, I was watching it, and I was like watching the chat be like, please make the price good. Please make the price good. It's like people were guessing like $700, $800.
Pro.
And then at the end, when they said $1,500, everyone was just like,
well, bye.
Guys, we're buying phones now that cost $1,500 up to $2,000. So if you want the groundbreaking VR tech, you want it to be light, you want it to have good battery life, pay up. You unfortunately got to pay up. My thing is, I think Meta will figure out the hardware, because the Oculus folks were always good with headset hardware. It's more like, what is this for, right? I don't believe in the metaverse they're pitching.
I was about to like sort of segue into this when Sam was talking about the whole like they want you to share a workspace thing, but at Meta Connect too, Meta did announce things like it's integrating Zoom and Microsoft Teams into the VR workspace, which I don't know how that necessarily will work, but okay.
Yeah, people don't want to work wearing a headset. Like that's a fundamental thing. Like it sucks. What?
Yeah. I'm wearing headphones now for this podcast, and I can't wait to throw them off.
It's like annoying. I could see the sort of like novelty of it. And, or also if like you were working remotely and the rest of your team was somewhere, it's like the only way for you guys to sit maybe virtually side by side. I did this too in the HoloLens too, and just like have a feeling of being together. Sure. We can't expect everybody to want this. This would have to be something your job buys for you and has to support for the entire company.
Right. So let me throw out this hypothetical situation, future sci-fi situation, where, you know, how like, you know, you get a new job and your company gives you a corporate laptop. But what if in the future, like, they just give you a headset, because you can work in the headset, you can have virtual screens, you can have like four like 100-inch screens in virtual reality, and then that's your work machine. granted, a lot of people are not going to like this, and I don't expect them to, but it's like, before it was just like, this was like a crazy thought, and now it's like, at least the hardware is there where you can see, oh, this is possible, but at the same time, it's like, there's a big kind of divergence between, oh, this is great hardware, and then people's general feelings about Facebook / Meta, and I think it's like, on some level, if this was coming from literally any other company, there would be probably a lot more positivity about this in general.
I mean, it depends, but like, yeah.
And like to what Devinder was saying, the metaverse as Zuckerberg and Meta, the company, has kind of described it, has been somewhat off-putting, especially like some of the early avatar stuff that just like were kind of scary and just weird, uncanny valley.
Well, speaking of avatar stuff, they also announced that avatars are getting important feature, legs! Dun, 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 dun. What? Okay. I mean, looks, I suspect that like every time I watch a trailer about some of this Meta Connect news, I see what looks like Zuckerberg in like doing some sort of like keynote speech, and I wonder if it's his avatar. I wonder if like maybe that's why he's got this huge push into the metaverse, because that's where he feels most at ease.
He himself is a simulation.
He himself feels most comfortable.
It's like a lot of computer geeks. You're most comfortable in front of the monitor. But I also like, this is what I keep trying to get back to, is like we see how desperate they are. And I feel like everybody is turned off by that desperation. It's like somebody who wants to try too hard to be your friend, you know, even though they may be very well-meaning. It's like, bruh, just ease it off a little. Maybe don't rename your whole company after this ideal that may not ever actually happen. Because I do think, hey, I've reviewed all the VR headsets. They're all right behind me. I want a lot of this to succeed. I don't want to live in VR. I don't want to like only exist there. It's a fundamental misunderstanding of the way we interact with technology, right?
Like, it's a lack of human understanding, which seems very on point for a Zuckerberg-led company. So, you know, update, the avatars are getting legs, so they really know what the people want, and they're going for it.
I mean, the whole floating torsos thing was never going to work. They had to do this, and I'm actually sort of surprised that they had announced it before, like, stuff like this, because that's part of, like, you're showing something, and you're showing something to people that's very incomplete, and you're just making you're kind of giving a bad impression. Whereas, like, people see, like, the avatars look better, the fidelity is much better, and now they just feel, like, less alien because of the legs thing. It's a small thing that, like, you know, you still can't control your legs because you're in VR, but, like, at the same time, it's like, you needed that to feel more normal.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of news out of Meta Connect, and for all of the details, like I said, you can check out Engadget.com. We had a lot of people doing breakouts and coverage. Go check it out. So, as if there wasn't enough going on this week, Samsung was all like, oh yeah, no, Microsoft Day is a very good day to do our Samsung Developer Conference, so there was a Samsung Developer Conference exactly on Microsoft Day. I think it started at 1 p.m., which is when
it's still going on. I think there's a day two today as well.
Absolutely. So there's still more news to look out for on today, Thursday, when we're recording this podcast. Sam, I saw you wrote up the news about Samsung and Google teaming up on smart home ecosystem stuff. You want to tell us what Samsung announced?
Yeah, and so this is kind of building off Matter, which is like the new like universal smart home protocol that like all the big companies are, you know, supporting. And so Samsung announced an expanded partnership with Google to make onboarding and setting up smart home devices a little bit easier. And this is like a really just great quality of life improvement because, you know, right now there are a bunch of smart home devices that like only work with the Google Home app or only work with a SmartThings app. And a lot of times if you, you know, onboarded a device into one ecosystem, you could not use the other app to control it. So what Samsung and Google are partnering up to do is that if you have a device set up in Google Home, if you boot up Samsung SmartThings, you'll just get a little notification saying, oh, let's import all the settings so you don't have to manually do it over again. And it works vice versa. So if you open up SmartThings and you have a whole bunch of stuff you open up Google and you have a whole bunch of smart things and smart things, then it'll kind of just cross-populate. And that's just like, this is the whole reason why, you know, people were like, you know, kind of excited for Matter, because Matter has kind of an expanded feature set. And so Matters has multi-admin support, which is what kind of enables you to be able to switch between ecosystems or switch between smart home apps without like having to redo all your settings. And it's just like no one like I'm a big smart home enthusiast, but like no one wants to like take hours to like I have to program in the settings for my lock. I have to and the more smart home gadgets you get, the more tedious it becomes. And so that is, I think, a really positive side for anyone who likes smart home stuff.
Yeah. This sort of also ties in vaguely to like Google's announcement last week about revamping the Google Home app to make just things more easy to kind of ingest into its ecosystem. Speaking of Google, I know we're not really talking about Google right now, but, you know, earlier this week, like I said, again, like there's not been enough news. Earlier this week, there was a Next event, Google's Next, where it announced some updates to Workspace as well. Like Google Meet will be able to automatically transcribe your meetings and provide you a transcription at the end and some other news there. We won't go into detail here, but you can, like I said, go to
engadget.com. That's a big upgrade for all like the interns at like the big companies who like whose only job was to like take down meeting notes. Google Meet's doing it for you, so maybe you can have like do something more productive.
And I will also say Google's transcription isn't that bad. It's pretty accurate, better than most YouTube, better than most other auto-generated transcriptions. So sorry. And also, yeah, goodbye poor interns are maybe out of a job, but maybe you can channel that time into something more productive. But like we just mentioned, the Samsung Developer Conference is still ongoing, so there will be more news and not, I think maybe more smart home related news. Will we see a Bixby speaker? You never know. But stay tuned to Engadget.com for the actual news coming out of that show. Now, speaking of Google, again, like I said, like, again, it's like, I'm sorry, but I have been very pissed at Google this week.
The amount of piling up in the last week and a half has just been outrageous.
In the last month, like, first we had that Search On event where it was, like, Maps and whatever, as we were preparing for the Pixel event, and then we got the Pixel event, and then we had the Pixel reviews, and then this week it was the Workspace event, and they announced this week they're making Chromebooks that are built for cloud gaming. So, resident Chrome OS nerd Nathan Ingram, Deputy Editor Nate Ingram, wrote this piece of news. Basically, there's just three new laptops from Asus, Acer, and Lenovo. These are three new Chromebooks that are going to, you know, they're purpose-built for cloud gaming, and they won't support just Google's own cloud gaming, which doesn't exist anymore. There's no more Stadia, RIP, rip.
Well, as of next year. It's still limping along for the next couple months.
Okay, thank you. I didn't realize that. I thought it was dead. But this will allow your Chromebooks to be machines for PC games and like do a lot of that processing in the cloud because, yeah, cloud gaming. So it's an interesting development. We don't know exactly how good these machines will be. And I think that Nate is going to prioritize getting his hands on one of these to test out for us. There's a lot of partnerships that have been announced. For example, GeForce Now, I believe, is one of them. Yeah, the devices will work with GeForce Now, Amazon's Luna, and Xbox Game Pass. So, I don't know. I mean, it sounds promising. I think we've all been very burned by Google this week that we're not sure how confident.
I'm not as like quite as pessimistic as you because, you know, Google has sort of been building towards this for a little while because, you know, they added support for Android apps so you can play all your Android games on Chromebooks, which is great. And then they added support for playing games via Steam on Chrome OS, which is kind of nice. So it's like they're starting to add more pieces to the puzzle. Chrome OS is starting to be like a slightly more full-featured OS. So I like the idea in theory. My problem is that like anytime I get on a Chromebook, like I'll inevitably be using it, and it'll be like one thing I can't do, and I'm just like, I'm done with this. And it's like I was trying to install a VPN on a Chromebook the other day, and it's just like, no, we don't do this. You have to figure out a completely different solution. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'll just go back to my normal laptop and be fine.
Yeah, I mean, to add on to what you're saying too, like Google's ops also optimizing Chrome OS to make launching games easier. So if you just type in the name of the game that you want to play in that like sort of start menu style button, you can just find the game and launch it. You don't have to go like into Steam first and then find the game title and then pull it up. Or you don't have to go into like Xbox Game Pass and then find. You should be able to find it more easily and seamlessly. For starters, it will only work with the GeForce Now catalog and the Google Play Store apps, but it wants to add this for the other services as well. And then, you know, all three laptops that were announced this week will also come with a 3-month subscription to the GeForce Now RTX 3080 tier, as well as 3 months of Amazon Luna Plus. And then the Asus laptop will come with also a free SteelSeries Rival 3 gaming mouse. So lots of like benefits, it seems like, to entice people into buying into this idea that Chromebooks can be gaming machines. But I guess we'll have to see. So I would say stay tuned to Engadget.com. We will have the full reviews of one of these laptops, at least, from Nate very soon. Now, speaking of new laptops and stuff just going on and on and on this week, there was a second Prime Day this year, and it's happening this week!
Why are we talking about this?
Because deals, deals, deals. I just want to say that yesterday was the early access day for Prime Day, and then today, I think onwards, is Prime Day. So head on over to Engadget.com to check out, Valentina
Pagano's. I think it's important that you mentioned it, but I'm also very angry at Amazon because we already have one Prime Day a year. Why do we need a second one? It's like, enough. Like, pick a day and that you can have that day or 2 days, because Prime Day is actually like multiple days now. Just do your thing. Like, before it was like kind of cute because it was like Christmas in July, right? Like, you get some deals on stuff in the summer, and now we have, oh, I guess it's holiday season, we have to have another Prime Day. It's too much.
And like Julio rightly points out, our live stream producer Julio rightly points out in our chat, he's like, he's also been getting so many notifications for this Amazon Prime Day thing. It's like, I'm done. First of all, the way it affects me and my work is that our team has had to work hard to write up all these deals posts to alert our readers and our audience to good deals happening, which is a nice service that we want to do. But then it also means that we're too taxed to do anything else on this literal week, which started with Columbus Day, making a shorter day for a lot of people in the industry. Like, we didn't get a day
I swear
off.
There's some like skull and bones meeting in like the woods somewhere where like all the executives could be like, yo, we're going to make the first two weeks off October just like completely nuts with everything but just these 2 weeks, because I don't know, for some reason we're gonna just like avalanche everybody with all the announcements.
And I want to correct, I stand corrected, it's not Columbus Day, that's an outdated way of saying it, it should be Indigenous Peoples Day, my apologies. It's like I've been saying this already, like, get together tech companies and sort your shit and talk to each other, and Google, One event, maybe two events in the month of October, and that's all you get.
But you have to space them out.
That's all you get. I don't even space them out. Put all your news in one event. Stop trying to do all these multiple things. I don't, you reach out to me for one more briefing, and they already have. Reach out to me for one more briefing, I swear to God, I will throw some poo at some walls.
Just real quick, something I've been working on. Go check out my review of the NVIDIA RTX 4090, which is the friggin' biggest video card I've ever seen. It is huge. This thing weighs 5 pounds. It takes up 3 PCIe slots. It is it's a tank. It's pretty much as big as the Xbox Series X. Honestly, it's like comparable to the PlayStation 5. Like, it's approaching that size. It is a big, big boy. I had to install a whole new power supply to test this, and also some new CPUs. So I have a 1,000-watt power supply because of this. It required 4 little power cables. I don't know if you've noticed, like, if you've had to plug in a video card recently, you need to have extra power in straight from your power supply. This needs 4 of those cables. It's just a monstrosity.
Okay, but yeah. DaVinci, the big question is, was all of that worth it?
Yes. It's so fast. It is ridiculously fast. I mean, the benchmarks are great. It's you could do 4K at 120 FPS with ray tracing, with DLSS. That's their like AI way to upscale all this stuff. The dreams of like whatever you want, turn on all the graphical stuff. They do come true with this video card. Do you need it? Is the question. And I don't. Honestly, for most gamers, I think you will be like, man, that's a really nice Ferrari. I couldn't live with that in my life. Like, it wouldn't, I don't have space in my driveway. I can't live on like 10 miles per gallon. You know, I need to fit my family. Realistically, I don't think this is a good GPU for a lot of people, unless you're like a super pro gamer or you're a content creator, because you could probably do a lot of good rendering work with this card. But we're going to see the 4080s, which start, I believe, at $899. The 4070s are going to happen eventually. This generation looks like it's going to be very, very powerful. So my recommendation is to maybe wait to see how those cards kind of pan out. Also, you'll probably want a Steam Deck or something, and those things you can just buy now. There's no more queue for the Steam Deck. I just picked up one, and I have not had much time to play with it. But man, just the like, I turn on a thing, and there's Steam, and I hit No Man's Sky, and 5 minutes later, I'm playing No Man's Sky in my
bed. 5 minutes?
Yeah. Well, I have fast internet, but yeah. I can download games really, really fast. I have gigabit internet over here. But yeah, it downloaded, installed. I'm in. And I'm playing this thing. It's big and it's unwieldy, but I do feel like for a lot of people, PC gaming will be better if you could maneuver around the house, bring it, make it more portable. Maybe not always with you when you're going for a walk, but just being able to take it away from my computer, I think, is a big thing. So, yeah, I like the 4090, but wait for your next purchase. This is not the GPU everybody should buy.
Well, the rest of the stuff me and Sam are working on is just struggling not to die. I do want to shout out that tomorrow is Sam Rutherford's birthday. So, everybody, send him your birthday wishes. And he'll be taking the day off, rightfully so. All right, let's move on to what we can do to enjoy ourselves and relax. Devendra, what is your pick?
Real quick, I want to shout out the movie Athena, which is on Netflix right now. It's directed by the French director Romain Gavras. It's about basically a full-on riot that happens at a housing project, the Athena housing projects in France. And it is a visual tour de force. And I think everybody should watch this movie. It starts off with basically a group of rioters, I call them. Like, they're people who are fighting against the police, but they're also people who are, you know, fighting for the freedom of their neighborhood. They want to. There was a video that showed that police had killed a young child, and it's kind of the community responding to that. And this movie opens up with a tour de force takedown of a police station. And just like the level of filmmaking here is powerful, but also the messages it's sending and showing off, like, just how, you know, especially struggling communities have to fight to be heard in a lot of Western societies, I think is really, really powerful. I think it's worth watching. It is an incredible film. It's a powerful film. And you can watch right now on Netflix. Super easy. So check it out. It's in French, but the most compelling parts are, it's just pure visual filmmaking. So as an action movie, I'd say go for it. Check it out.
So Sam, I think you know what my pick is going to be because I've been just talking about it nonstop. Can you guess? Oh, I see your face. You're frowning. Your face palming.
I made the mistake of looking at the show notes. Did you see? I wrote a little comment for you.
I didn't see. Where is your little comment?
I think I might have gotten cleaned up.
What was your comment? So, okay. So let's start with my pick. My pick is, unfortunately, I hate to admit this, my pick this week is the Try Guys. It is the Try Guys content. And I hate that this is how I've come to learn of the Try Guys, is the
right,
whole...
Right, I've been making fun of Shirtland all week because all
weeks,
up until...
Weeks. It's been 2 weeks.
Sorry, 2 weeks. All up until, like, before the big Try Guys scandal broke, Shirtland had been, like, completely oblivious.
Yeah.
And then, because of the scandal, Shirtland's been going back and watching old content and is like, oh, I love this bit. It's like, I want to... Can I be a Try Guy? And I was like, where have you been?
Sam, and so we have a group chat where Sam, Chris Velasco, and Julian Chokatsu from Wired have been like, they were starting to freak out about everything that was happening as it was happening. So like maybe 3 weeks ago, like one of them was like, did you hear that Ned Fulmer from Try Guys might have been like caught, blah, blah, blah. Oh, and then they started sharing all these like little updates and I was blissfully out of it. I was like not giving a crap. I was like, I don't care. Who are the Try Guys? What is going on? And they tried to explain it to me and I still didn't pick up until like, I think Chris V dropped like an actual full, like, here's what's happened sort of tweet thread link. And I went and read up and I was like, all right. Then I think I ended up watching one video. I went and watched one video. I was like, oh my gosh. Okay. They're very watchable. Oh, they're very likable people. Other than Ned. Like
she's like, oh, this channel with like 8 million subscribers. Oh, there must be something about them that people like.
This is true. And ever since then, I have nonstop been asking Sam, V, and Julian to be like, let's be the Try Guys. Let's do our version. Try Guys, but more diverse. Try Guys and a gal. Try Guys and a Try Girl. But the reason I like the content and why I'm recommending it and why I've been kind of obsessively watching all of it is it's such good, like, wholesome stuff, right? Setting aside the controversy, and if you can ignore the fact that this one person whose whole brand image was that he's this family-oriented guy who loves his wife and then went on to cheat on the wife with a coworker, a subordinate, whatever. If you can set all of that drama aside, a lot of this content is not only like wholesome and warm, it's also I like that they tackle difficult issues for women from a male perspective sometimes. So like a lot of
or even dudes issues. There's an old episode about like one of the Try Guys got like hair plugs, and it's just like that's something that like has been something that people kind of shy away from talking about.
Yes, all kinds of stuff. Like they do things like they shed a light on things that society tends to be very critical on, things like pole dancing or whatever. And they're even just like ballet dancers, where they all try ballet for the first time and they're like, oh my gosh, this is more physically exhausting or taxing than I imagined it would be. They did also like try on women's underwear. They try on brides' dresses or whatever. And there's this one of them. His name is Keith, and I mean, like I need to introduce y'all. His constant thing with these like try on women's clothes things is like, why are sizing things so difficult? Why are they so inconsistent? Why isn't there anything in my size? Like, these are questions women have had, but like no one realizes, no one at least that's not a you know, woman or identifies as a woman who's going shopping for these things have really realized, even though we've written about it a lot. So like watching them tackle these from like a different perspective and do it in a very, in the past, non-toxic way. I think their whole brand was non-toxic and wholesome. It's nice, right? It's nice to see. And so I've just had it on over and over. They also do a lot of food shows. And I think that was their like main brand thing for a while, was like Try Guys without a recipe. They make things without recipes. And that's a very Sam thing to do. Sam doesn't do things without a recipe, but Sam gets very creative.
I love a good recipe, but I think in some ways the pinnacle of cooking is like having a recipe so ingrained in you that you can riff on it, like, and make adjustments as you need to, or like, you know, for guests, like, you know, I don't like onions or something like that. And it's like, it's like cooking nirvana when you don't always need to be looking at like step-by-step instructions.
Yeah. I love when like, so Sam also like, when Sam and his wife host these events, they have like very fun things for us guests to do. For example, they did like a make your own sushi roll, or like make your own dumplings, and like they'll provide the fillings and all you have to do is assemble the stuff. But Sam always likes to do creative ideas for fillings, right? I love your like hamburger, your cheeseburger.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always doing like Asian fusion like recipes. So it's like a hamburger dumpling or like a... can't remember, like...
Remember your keto sushi that I loved? I can't even remember what that was.
Oh, actually. Yeah. It was a hamburger sushi, but, like, also with a little Spam in there. And
right,
yeah.
With just seaweed only as the wrap. So no rice, just hamburger, mincemeat stuff. You did, like, you have your traditional, like, Taiwanese chives thing as a filling, too. And then you have, like, mapo tofu one time as, like, one of your fillings.
That was an experimental one, yeah.
That was pretty experimental. Your wife tends to do, like, mushroomy, veggie-type stuff. So it's all good. Anyway, Try Guys, don't watch it hungry, but there you go. Sam, what are you recommending this week?
So the show I'm recommending is an anime. It's called Chainsaw Man. The fall anime season just started, and there's only one episode out right now, but I watched it last night and it's awesome. It's definitely a little bit gory, but it's like, and the show is the name of the title, okay? It's a guy with chainsaws on his arms, and so but like, it's also weirdly wholesome in a way. The animation is excellent. It's like really crisp. And so it's kind of like the premise of the story is like this guy has been like down on his luck and he got saddled with a big debt from his dad. And, you know, there are what they call devils in this world. And so there's devil hunters and he's a devil hunter. And so he has a little really cute pet chainsaw dog and they go around killing devils. And that, I don't want to ruin the plot, but that's kind of the premise of the story. But in like just the way they do it, it's just really intense. And they the way they do the action, it's like it's one of the best like action animes I've seen. It's like up there with One Punch Man and like Jujutsu Kaisen and stuff like that. And so if you like anime and you like just a really good action anime with a little bit of gore, I can't recommend Chainsaw Man enough. It's been one of the most like long-awaited like manga adaptations, and so far, at least one episode in, it's living up to expectations.
I need to point out that based on the artwork that we're showing on the live stream right now, it looks like this dog is like, it looks like a a pair of butt cheeks with a chainsaw in the crack.
How dare you? The dog's name is Pachito, and he has a little chainsaw on his head, and he's the most cute, wholesome thing. And I will not have you make fun of the dog because the dog is awesome.
I'm not making fun of the dog. I'm just pointing out that it looks like it's cute. You know, it's like
you
a
said. It
peach.
Looks like a butt. Okay,
butts are cute. Butts are cute. Who's his butts aren't cute?
Okay, yeah. Fair enough.
See, there you go. Cute little butt with a chainsaw in the crack. You know, that's the dog. But I will give this a shot because demons and chainsaws are things that I like. Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. And this week, thanks for putting up with us. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. This podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter and at the Filmcast podcast at thefilmcast.com.
You can find Sam online at
Sam Rutherford and as always on Engadget.com.
If you want to send me tips on relaxing and calming myself down, you can hit me up on Twitter. I'm at Sherlyn though. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.